Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Ann Danahy. As part of the WPSU series on school safety efforts in central Pennsylvania, we invited a group of parents, students, and educators to discuss school safety, what it means, and what we should be doing to get there. Lori Bedell moderated the discussion. Bedell teaches rhetoric at Penn State and is part of Deliberation Nation, which guides students through discussions, and she serves on the State College Area School Board.
Welcome. Thank you all for your willingness to participate in this conversation. The goal of this conversation is that we hear about one another's experiences and values so that we can come to an understanding of the perspectives that you all hold. We also understand that we're all here to listen and learn from one another. And so with that, if we could just go around the table and if you could all introduce yourselves and let us know why you care about this issue, what brought you here to have this conversation. Why don't we start with you, Jake?
Hello, my name is Jacob Matchock. I'm a senior at Moshannon Valley High School. And this issue is very important to me because guns have a lot to do with our world right now and the world that's developing. And I think it's an issue at hand that needs to be spoken about. There's many opinions about it, and I care deeply for everyone's opinion.
Matchock was one of the participants, along with Kyra Gines, a junior at State High, Martha Sherman, a mother of two elementary school students in the State College Area School District, and a criminologist on the faculty at Penn State, and John Zessiger, superintendent of the Moshannon Valley School District. During a nearly two-hour discussion, they talked about both the idea of hardening schools or trying to make them safer with things like metal detectors and armed guards, and softening schools or providing counseling services and mentoring to students who need it. Moderator Lori Bedell noted that statistically speaking, school is one of the safest places for a child to be.
Statistically, mass shootings happen mostly away from schools. Restaurants, for example, have a much higher rate of mass shootings. So given that we have many more serious threats outside of school, why are school shootings so front and center in our conversations these days?
This is John. I'll start, I think, speaking as a parent. Most of those other locations that I go to with my children, I'm with them. So as a parent, I kind of know what's going on to some extent, but every day parents entrust us that they're going to put their child on the bus or drop them off at our front doors and then be away from them for a 7.5 or 8 hour day where they're not sure exactly what's going on and they don't have the comfort of being able to turn over and touch and see and talk to. And so I think that elevates it on the parents' side of things. And I think that's why it comes to the forefront in schools, is because there's that separation between the family and the child during that time. And you're entrusting your child to someone else that you're not seeing them every day, all day.
This is Kyra. I would say, like you mentioned, because it's so statistically low, it's something that we've socially accepted it as a safe place. And when an entire society of people set their expectations on a safe place for somebody to go and then break that expectation, it becomes sensationalized because it's not where it should have happened, especially if we look at a situation like Parkland. You're looking at suburbs. You're looking at the picture of safety.
Hardening schools really entails things like metal detectors, more armed guards, school resource officers, even in some places, the idea of arming teachers, the thinking that is if a person does come into school intending to do harm, they won't get very far, and the potential for losses will be reduced. Softening schools, on the other side of it, entails providing more psychological and social supports, an emphasis on empathy and social-emotional learning, the intention of which is to make school a less hostile, more proactive space where the acting out of violence is less likely to happen in the first place. And so I'd like to talk about each of these, and I want to start with the concept of hardening schools. So how do we feel about this option? And I'd like us all to try to see both the potential benefits and the costs or concerns. So what is there to like potentially about the approach of hardening schools?
This is Jake, and I agree with hardening schools. I think that adding more protection and safety, in my opinion, it's helpful. It's more safe for the school, metal detectors, security guards. I just feel like the more people that are involved and the more that's involved to make sure every student's safe, I think that's a great idea. I think teachers being armed is something that could further be looked into with a rigorous course for that. I think that's something that needs to be taken very carefully and approached. But I think that when you have someone, a teacher who's armed, that just offers another support system. If someone was to break into school, it offers someone other than one security guard to protect the students that are there.
This is John. Obviously, I want our facility to be as secure as we can, but I don't want to be the state correctional facility. That's not my goal. I really hope as a district that we focus more on some of those preventative measures, some of those psychological and counseling and social work, and working to build our families and our communities that are struggling a little bit, because I think that's really the solution.
Martha Sherman said she could see the benefits of some ways of hardening schools that aren't as obvious to children, such as glass that is sealed to be safe against bullets.
This is Martha. I want my children to feel like it's a safe place. And for younger children, I don't think bringing in the idea that it might not be makes it feel safer for them. They already come in with the assumption that it's safe. So when you provide things like metal detectors or an armed guard or something, they're going to say, why do we need that? Why do we have that? Why is that there? And so that then opens the idea that maybe it's not as safe as they thought. And so for younger children, at least, I don't find that it would be that reassuring to have those things available to them. From a criminologist perspective, there isn't any evidence at this point that it's particularly effective. It's almost impossible because it's so rare, right, to find that it's really effective. But we do know that there are some potential psychological effects, particularly of activities that occur with hardening, like shooter drills. So I think you have to be cautious.
Do you think that it's a deterrence at all for somebody who might be thinking about committing some sort of violent act?
If there's more security there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do think that. I think that if you are someone who's thinking that and you know that there's several security guards, you know that there's great security cameras, locks on all the doors, a teacher may be armed. I mean, you have so many obstacles to get to the students that it would be extremely challenging.
This is John. I think there's definitely some different perspectives. You know, a state college here, you have university police, state police, you have township police, you have all kinds of officers around. In Houston, where we're at, I have a state police barracks about 30 miles away, and that's it. So where the response time in State College could be less than a minute, the response time in Houtsdale could be 20 minutes. And then when parents do have concerns, I love when parents call me. What I hate is when no one says anything and I have no clue.
The group also discussed softening schools and the role of a student's home life.
And this is John. Again, I do believe that relationship building, whether it's with the trusted adult, whether it's with a student, I think that's the number one way that we solve a lot of these problems is through relationships and making people feel like they're valued. There's a lot of homes, unfortunately, in our community that it's not a great environment for a student. And to bring them in and say, hey, trust an adult or trust a peer when they have no reason to trust an adult or trust a peer, it certainly makes it difficult.
This is Martha. I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think that starting young is probably the most important aspect of the softening, is that you take a kid that's come from a tough family background and they've been in it for 16 years, and then you say, hey, there's a counselor here if you want to go talk to him. They're not going to go talk to him. So starting young is important. Parents are a far greater danger to children than schools. So even if your school is safe, even if you have every security measure in place, those kids still need, you know, something that can help them with their emotional well-being.
The group also discussed challenges aside from money when it comes to making schools safe, secure, and welcoming. John Zessiger said that as superintendent of a small rural school district, he sees a lot of staff turnover, including teachers.
When you have a new fourth grade teacher or two new fourth grade teachers every year, because I have about 10 to 18% turnover annually, between retirements and people moving on to other districts, it's tough to build those relationships. We struggle in a smaller district to have some uniform people that are there throughout a child's experience.
As we wrestle with thinking about this, what effects are you concerned with?
This is Kyra. So I worry about when somebody goes, mental health, that it's going to become, who has mental health issues? Who's dangerous? Who can we put out? Oh, you've been diagnosed. You're not part of this group anymore. Or we're going to be watching you because we know you to have this situation. So we're going to make this officer follow you around or something. I don't think that would happen. That's a bit extreme. I just worry about a further stigmatization with no really attempt at educating everybody about the complexities of mental health before bringing it into the conversation as, how we can control that, because that's not really the case.
What I hear, and tell me if I'm wrong, is, you know, that the potential for a slippery slope, that once a student gets diagnosed with something, then the microscope is on that person, which could be dangerous.
John, I'll add into it. And I know we're talking about schools here a lot, but that stigma is so community-based. That conversation of it being a positive, it's just something that we're working through, needs to happen at the bank, at the grocery store, at Walmart, at wherever it is that you happen to go. Schools certainly get centered because we have such exclusive opportunity to do some things. But again, when you talk about a rural school district, there's not a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a nothing in my community. And so my families have to travel to Clearfield, Altoona State College, and then I have a family with no transportation. And so, you know, all of a sudden, all those barriers that we were talking about on some of the other aspects are right there again. It's not a barrier to the school. It's a barrier to the family. It's a barrier to access to those resources.
John Zesiger thinks legislators need to realize school districts need more community and school-based access to resources. The group also discussed unintended consequences of either hardening or softening schools. Kyra Gines weighed in.
As with anything with consequences I've experienced as a minority in the area, it tends to disproportionately affect us. For hardening in particular, there are studies proving both here and maybe in an inner city that when you kind of bring in this punitive environment, teachers will, not all teachers, but teachers will kind of pick on somebody that they can pick on. And so for around here, it can look like the minority kids in the area. You know, I know we're on radio, so people can't see that I'm the only person of color sitting in the room, but this is not rare for me. I just worry about, like, you know, when we talk about safety for one person is not safety for everybody.
Kyra Gines also pointed out how one student might think a school police officer is great, but another student's experience with law enforcement can affect their perspective.
This other student has just seen a string of police brutality on the news, and now you send them to school, and what do they see? They see an officer. They're not going to feel that same safety because they know they're at risk.
This is Martha. And even just diversity in the way you're raised, my children, we are not a gun family. We don't have water guns. Right? Like, it is not something that they are permitted to see, have, play with, pretend, none of it. And so when they see a police officer, they're scared because they have a gun. And so they think that person must be a bad guy or there's something wrong. And so they're going to have a very different reaction just because they have a different background and a different family life.
The group also talked about the idea of arming teachers, something one Pennsylvania school board voted to allow. But facing legal challenges, the board suspended the policy. The case is now tied up in court.
This is Jake. I've heard both sides. There's some teachers who say, we're just not cut out to have a gun. Like, we just can't do it. And then there's other teachers who, avid hunter, they'll be like, you can put a gun in my hand and I feel like I could be very helpful to the situation if that was ever to occur. So I think that as a teacher standpoint and a student standpoint, hearing that teachers should definitely have that option, like, to say no to that, because some just aren't cut out to hold a gun. And that's just how it is. And then there's others who could benefit.
Superintendent John Zesiger said he and others are not trained to work with guns.
We're trained and paid to be educators. That's what we do. So I think when the Penn States of the world have concealed carry and hand combat training as part of the teacher preparation program, then you may be in a different point. But there's just nothing in our system right now, from the time that you decide you want to teach all the way up to the time that your superintendent retire, that really prepares you in any capacity for that functionality. We're educators.
This is Martha. Am I the only one that thinks it's insane that we have to have a conversation about teachers shooting intruders? I mean, we don't talk about arming doctors or arming the guy that works at Chick-fil-A, but those places are more dangerous, right, than the schools. I mean, as a high schooler, I had a smart mouth and I had some hothead teachers, and it's really good that they were not armed, right? It's just, this is not an environment with all of the emotions and the stress and hormones. It just doesn't seem like the kind of place where you would want to even have a discussion about putting a gun in their hands.
And yet this is, John, and the sad thing is if we had this whole discussion here on school safety and that topic was not mentioned, the listening audience would think that we missed something.
Sure, sure.
Which is even more scary.
Yep.
This is Kyra. I don't think taking such a fearful reactionary measure is going to do us any good, especially not one that's going to be so last resort. I would like to see maybe if my teacher went through a training where they learned martial arts, or they went through a training where they learned 50 different ways to, you know, incapacitate somebody with a stapler. I'd go, whoa, I feel safe, you know, because that's already in the classroom. That's survival skills, and that's what we need.
Stapler,
we need survival.
Nunchucks.
Right. Yeah. I want to see that. I don't need to see a handgun in my teacher's hand. And I will agree with Martha. I mouth off sometimes, and I really don't want to see some of those teachers. And I mean, that bias as well. I don't want to see those teachers with the capability to hurt me beyond what they already can.
Moderator Lori Vidal said the fact that communities are asking whether they should arm their teachers shows there's been a huge cultural shift. As mass shootings continue to happen, she said, one question is whether society has accepted that as a norm.
Is this just the way things are going to be? Do we have other choices? And if so, how do we get to them? What do we think about this culture? Are we okay with it? How do we make a difference if we're not okay with it?
This is Martha. We have friends from Canada who, there was a lockdown at State High recently, and she had never had to worry about it before because she didn't live here. And so the fact that that's the difference for you is that you moved, right, to the land of opportunity where we have to talk about school shootings. And so there are obviously options and choices and ways that things can be done where that's not the concern. But changing a culture is difficult.
So this is John. We're talking about shootings. There's so much more that plays a factor, even just down to boyfriends and girlfriends who abuse one another. I think that's where that softening part is so crucial, because the armed security guard or the metal detector only takes care of one small facet of what a school district is actively focusing on during the course of a day and a year. There are so many other violent, for lack of a better word, violent actions that those measures don't even address in any capacity. It's really important to make sure that we're wide enough in our scope of, you know, what are the types of negative behaviors that schools are dealing with, and society in general, but schools in particular with this conversation, that, and how can we use our resources to address the bulk of those?
This is Martha. I think that there's a tendency to just do the things that feel like they're going to help, and to do the things that will make parents feel good, and to do the things that we've done in the past without using the tools of research to see what will work. What are the consequences of this? Is this going to be helpful? Is this not going to be helpful? Has anyone else tried it? What was their outcome? So that you're not using your resources shooting blindly. Pardon the phrase. trying to fix it, because sometimes, you know, like representatives, politicians, they're supposed to represent the people. If the people say they want armed teachers, does that mean it's the right thing and that it's going to be effective? Sometimes you have to be willing to say, let's look at the evidence that we have and make a decision, not just what makes people feel better, what people want. In the Parkland incident, they had the armed guard that didn't go in, and the shooter had been through the active shooter training, so he knew to pull the fire alarm. So they taught him how to not get caught that way. So it's not always effective just because it feels good.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. We're talking with a group of parents, students, and educators about what can be done to make schools safe. Lori Bedell is moderating the discussion.
What are the roles and responsibilities of communities and individuals outside of the schools in helping schools do what they can to soften schools, to provide kids with the sorts of resources that will prevent them from getting to a place where violence of any sort, self-inflicted or inflicted upon others, happens? So parents, kids, legislators, community members, take your pick.
This is Martha. I would say don't gripe about your taxes, because the schools need the money, right? I mean, it's going to something important. So if we need to pay teachers a little more so that there's not turnover, or if we need to hire a psychologist because there's not one in your town, or those funds are crucial to keeping this environment safe that you want for your children. You want the school to keep them safe. You have to provide them the resources to do that.
And this is John. One of the reasons I said I'm always excited when I have students at the table is because really the best defense against all of this is them. They know more about what's going on with their peers and their classmates, and where a teacher may not, you know, we may not see every student every day, every class period. Some student is seeing them and it does have the opportunity to interact with them. If I could change one thing about society in general, it's hard enough to go to school as it is. I would just make students respect one another, because if they just cared about their fellow students, I really believe that we could solve a lot of these problems in a very short period of time, because they really have the knowledge. They have the social media presence to know what's going on. They have the interactions on a regular basis. They don't want to have a discussion with an adult. They will have it with peers. If I could train all of our students, would just be to come say something. If you have that gut feeling like something just isn't right, or I'm just a little concerned, if they would just come say something, it'll go a long way to moving things in the right direction.
This is Jake, and it goes simple as a little compliment to someone else and just spreading kindness that really can do a big part in that. Our school right now, we're doing a sticky note campaign where you write a compliment on a sticky note and give it to someone else. And it's so simple as that, where that could just make someone's day by getting, I like your shirt, or you look very nice today. Something so small can really make a difference. And that's where it starts with the students, because people grow up in schools. Everyone goes to school, so you grow up with that. And if you have bad experience in school, that's when problems occur in real life. So if your school experience is better and you have people that support you in school and you can build connections and build friends, then that just sets you up for a better life.
The group also discussed the idea of active shooter drills, what age group they're appropriate for, and whether they help make students feel safer or more fearful.
This is Kyra. I do advocate for the active shooter drills. I would like to know that in situations I know where to go, I know how to help others, and I know I can get out because I've been trained to do so, because I've been informed about my exits, because we're not just fish out of water.
This is Jake, and just agreeing with you on that, because every drill that we've had, I've taken a positive from it. I've learned. I think that I've had it in several different classes, and I've gotten to hear the teacher who's in that class, I've gotten to hear their side of it, and they have a set plan that they follow. There's a booklet, actually, I think, and it's a set plan. It just makes me, I feel safer knowing that there's a plan and everyone's accounted for. I feel like it's a good thing for us to know that if something was to happen, there's a way to prevent it and there's a way to be safer. And I've gotten positive from that and from every teacher that I've encountered it with. And it's good for the students, I think, to hear plans and hear that they're cared about.
Martha Sherman noted she's okay with shooter drills for high school students who already know shootings happen, but she doesn't think elementary students should do them.
For me, the chance of a school shooting is so rare. The chance of psychological damage that you're intentionally inflicting on my child by having an active shooter training is not rare. Not that they're trying to harm my children, but that you know that that's a very real consequence for something that rarely occurs that I'm not comfortable with.
Kyra Gines compared it to teaching children how to swim so they can respond if they ever get knocked into water.
Maybe you're not telling the two-year-old, like, you might drown, so here's swimming. You are telling them, this is the skill we need to have, so we're going to learn how to swim.
Martha Sherman agreed, but she said she would draw the line at having her child hide under the desk while it said there's an active shooter.
But if you say, in an emergency, these are the places that we can go that are safe. You need to be sure that you're listening. You need to be quiet. You need to follow your teacher. You know, and it gives the teachers an opportunity to practice it as well and know which kids they're going to be struggling with and which kids they can kind of lean on.
But John Zessiger said there need to be drills for elementary students. Active shooter drills, he said, are staff only. But crisis drills, even if they're not called that, are imperative for all students.
Even from the standpoint of the student's comfort level, but even from the teacher's comfort level, to know I have 26 kids, I've got to get out of here. What does that look like? What does it look like in a panic mode? It's not just, okay, everybody on the blue line, single file, no talking, because that isn't how any crisis is going to come about. Not that we want to say there's a shooter and you got to do something, but having drills that are spur of the moment, that aren't announced, that you block exits, that you take students and kind of hide them away so the teacher, whatever your protocol is for acknowledging that a student's missing or that you have an extra student so that all of those things are taken into account. That has to happen in real time, in real drills with real students there.
This is Martha. We'll probably just not have to agree on it because there is plenty of evidence of the psychological damage of creating crisis situations for children. There's not plenty of evidence that these drills do anything in these situations. And it's too rare for me to be willing to put my kid in that risk.
After about 2 hours of talking, Lori Bedell wrapped up the group's discussion.
Are you thinking about anything differently? And then perhaps, what will you take away from this conversation? So any or all of those things.
This is Martha. I think one thing that we talked about that was not a new idea to me, but something that I tend to forget when thinking about school safety is the difference between accessibility of police resources. And because I've always lived in a place where it's you just call and they come. And not only do you call and they come, but you call and you trust that they're going to be helping you, which is also not the case everywhere. So having to allow for a lot of flexibility by community, I think, is an important part of the conversation, that there's not going to be a blanket solution for every school district. I think my takeaway would be that the softening helps outside of school. Hardening schools helps the school, that school. But softening schools helps everyone because those mental health issues, those depressive symptoms, that anger, resentment doesn't just stay with the child when they're at school. It's everywhere. So the same people that are resentful at school are resentful outside the school and then going to work and engaging in a workplace shooting. So having that assistance in the school helps long term and helps everyone in the community.
Thanks for doing this. This was robust and rich and insightful, and I'm just grateful that they asked me to sit in and listen to all of you.
You've been listening to Take Note on WPSU. Today's panel discussion was led by Lori Bedell, who teaches rhetoric at Penn State and is part of the Deliberation Nation. Participants were Kyra Gines, a junior at State High, Jacob Matchock, a senior at Moshannon Valley High School, Martha Sherman, a mother of two elementary school students in State College and a criminologist on the faculty at Penn State, and John Zessiger, superintendent of the Moshannon Valley School District. This episode of Take Note is part of a WPSU series on school safety that aired this week. You can hear this series and other episodes of Take Note at WPSU.org. I'm Ann Danahy, WPSU.